Wednesdays, as you know, we talk economic development in this world of Northwest Mississippi. Super Talk's home in Northwest Mississippi is 93.7. We cover 13 counties in this North Mississippi area, and without, you know, great people like the guest that's coming up, and our guest is brought to us today by Baptist Memorial Hospital North Mississippi in Oxford. They've been a great friend of this program and bringing us at least one person each month to come in and talk about, you know, something and some of the great services they give to the people. Today it's Dr. Kevin Hall. He is interventional cardiologist. Now, I've got to ask a lot of questions of you. I know Stern Cardiovascular. I've been in around that throughout life and things of that nature. But give us a little background information, exactly what that title means, how you got into this North Mississippi area, and just a few things about you, if you don't mind.
Well, good morning. Thanks so much for having me. I am originally from Tupelo, Mississippi, born and raised, and went to Ole Miss here from 2000 to 2004. And after I left here, I did training at Boston at Harvard Med, doing research actually in infectious diseases, of all things. And then did my medical school at Georgetown. So graduated from Georgetown and did residency at University of Chicago. Then I came back and worked as an internal medicine doctor for about a year down on the coast in Gulfport. And finally, I did my cardiology training at Wake Forest Baptist Hospital in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and decided to bring my talents back here to a home. And I got a family here, and a little one-year-old and a 14-year-old stepson, Cameron, and my wife. And so we're happy to be back in town and closer to home.
I can relate with the young ones, too. The youngest is about to be 11 months, and so the bags under the eyes and the no sleep and things.
Wow, that's right.
I understand that if you're looking at my face, what you're seeing, you know, without a doubt. So part of this discussion that we have with other people, too, you just brought up something that I want to mention. You had to go to other places for school and for things, but you came back to Mississippi. You came back close to home and doing things, and that's a lot of the discussion I have with any industry or with whatever it might be, is getting people to come back to Mississippi. Why did you make that? Other than it was home to begin with, why did you decide I'm coming back?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think for us, one of the reasons was because of family. You know, we're closer to family. My family is closer here, and my wife's family is from New Orleans. And so we're, in general, closer. With the one-year-old, we got free babysitters now, so that works out. But you know, definitely from a professional standpoint, so I always remember in medical school, we have the lecture on obesity and heart disease. They show the map, and then they show Mississippi in bright red. And at the time, of course, everybody knew I was from Mississippi, so they looked back at me and say, hey, what's going on in Mississippi? Well, you know, why do we have higher rates of obesity and higher rates of heart disease and diabetes and strokes, heart attacks? Well, you know, we can talk about those things, but that was one of the reasons, one of the primary reasons I decided to come back. I mean, you know, born and raised here, and it's hard to now have the, blessed to have the knowledge that I have now and not want to come back and give back to my home state of Mississippi. So happy to be here, and hopefully we can make a difference here.
Well, we're glad you're back, and I know we have to make some changes in ourselves, the people that are listening and this person that's talking to you right now. Before we, you know, put the microphones on and started discussing, we talked a little bit about my issues, genetics in the Darby family. Things just happen. And, you know, I've mentioned I hope I'm getting this right. The left bundle branch block. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That is a thing
that
I've been told that I have. And vasovagal syncope, which was the scare. I think, you know, when they first mentioned something with the heart and they just explained it as you did prior to getting on, I was kind of okay with that. The whole the syncope thing, when I can actually feel myself about to pass out. I knew it was going to go. I did a tilt table test, and the people in the room with me, are you sure you're okay, Mr. Darby? Oh, yeah, I'm fine. Are you sure you're okay, Mr. Darby? Oh, I'm fine. And then I heard one of them mention what my blood pressure actually was, and then I said, oh, no, I'm not fine. And I felt it come, and a lot of times people don't. It's a scary situation. Can you explain a little bit more to me and to the people why that happens?
Right. So vasovagal syncope, or also called neurocardiogenic syncope, is, in fact, the most common cause of people passing out across the world. It's one of the most common complaints or things that I see in clinic. Now, why do people have vasovagal syncope? Well, just to break it down in just simple terms, so for the most part, when you're lying down or even sitting down, most of the blood in your body starts to pull down into your legs. So that if you stand up really fast, all of that blood that's pulled down in your legs has to make it up to your brain. And if it doesn't make it there fast enough, your body's smart, you'll pass out.
Right.
Then the blood will make it to your brain because you're flat. And you sometimes will regain consciousness after what we call a syncopal episode, okay? So that's why in the middle of the night, you know, if you have to get up really fast, use the bathroom, what happens when you stand up really fast? The first few steps or first few seconds, you get lightheaded or dizzy, okay? Now, what I tell my patients to do is, you know, if they have to get up really fast, just in general, you want to make it measured. So, you know, if you're lying down, you know, get to the sitting position for a few seconds, then gradually stand up, okay? But vasovagal syncope, again, the most common cause of people passing out across the world, it can happen because of certain movements, and it's primarily led by a nerve that runs up and down both sides of your neck called your vagus nerve, like Las Vegas.
Okay.
It's spelled V-A-G-U-S. That nerve, when it activates, does one or two things, and one or both of those things can cause you to pass out. That nerve causes your blood pressure to drop and also causes your heart rate to drop. And again, one or both of those can cause you to pass out. So when you're going from a sitting to a standing position, sometimes when you're moving your neck left or right or extending your neck, sometimes people pass out on the toilet when they're defecating, because when you're bearing down, you actually activate that nerve. So we have people come in because they've passed out on the toilet. So there are a number of reasons. The key thing is, whenever you're feeling things, the room spinning, or you're feeling like you're about to pass out, because this happened to me once before, you want to try to sit down, get to the closest safest area where you can sit down, because if you start to pass out, you don't have the reflexes like you can if you're tripping, when you can put your hands out in front of you. When you pass out, you really go out and you just hope that there's nothing in your path when you fall to hurt yourself.
I was lucky in that regard. You know, whether it was a couple of times sitting down, it happened into a recliner, but that was after a day of coaching baseball and it was hot and I didn't drink enough fluids myself and things happened. And now, as you mentioned, mine was blood pressure and heart. I had both of those things happen. And luckily, I'm on a very small dose of a pill that hopefully, I guess, balances the fluids and things and helps out in that situation. So knock on whatever this is built on right here. That's, quote, under control at this point.
Very good.
And hopefully, I mean, there could be some people out there that are going through a similar thing that maybe now you have a little idea of what that could be. Let's talk about Mississippi and getting heart healthy. And what can we do to do that? What were some of the suggestions that you would have?
Right. So that's a very great question. You know, a lot of what we see, particularly in the South, as it relates to heart disease, cardiovascular disease, is cultural in a sense. It's also, and when you talk about culture, you're talking about lifestyle habits. So the toughest part of my job is to change people's lifestyle, right? Because we're so used to living a certain type of way. We're used to eating certain types of foods. We're used to, a lot of people can be sedentary and not want to, participate in cardiovascular activities. So diet and exercise are key components, but diet and exercise are part of people's lifestyles, and that's tough to change. So with that being said, my recommendations to living a heart-healthy lifestyle, this is kind of multiple-fold. So when you break it down into conditions, so high blood pressure, hypertension, right? A lot of people suffer from hypertension. It runs in my family. I control my blood pressure with diet and exercise. But The key is for blood pressure, you want your top number, your systolic number, to be less than 140. If we can keep your top number less than 140, then that lowers your risk of heart attack, stroke, and kidney failure. Now, those are the three organs that are on the receiving end of high blood pressure. Okay, so the higher your top number, the more damage that you're doing to those organs. Your brain, increasing your risk of stroke. Your heart, increasing your risk of heart attack or heart disease. And your kidneys, increasing your risk of kidney failure. Okay, so that's number one. Number two is controlling your cholesterol. So the LDL is considered the bad cholesterol. So you should be having your cholesterol checked by your primary care physician annually to make sure that your LDL is staying within normal limits. That's the cholesterol that gets sticky and it goes to your brain, your heart. It can cause heart attack and can cause stroke. Diabetes is a major component in the progression or the development of heart disease. And we see that all the time. And we actually say that diabetes is an equivalent to coronary artery disease. It's such a strong indicator. So most people that have diabetes, if you do a heart catheterization on them, 9 times out of 10, you'll see some level of blockages in their heart just simply based on the fact that they have diabetes, okay? One of the major risk factors of diabetes, of course, is diet. It can be genetic, but you can have abdominal fat. You can be fat anywhere else. You can have a fat head, fat neck, but belly fat is one of the number one risk factors for developing diabetes, and so that's always important to tell patients.
Well, and those that know me and the Darbys know that there's one place we have that fat, and it is
that's right,
right
we're,
there.
We're
it's
all
tough.
We're all guilty. Yep, we're all guilty. So
and it's diet, tough to get off too.
It is tough to get off. You know, crunches. You know, cardiovascular activities. I always tell my patients that, you know, I'm a big component of doing it yourself. And a lot of people will say, well, do I need to be on these medications for life? Do I need to be on my blood pressure medicine for life? Do I need to take my diabetes medicines for life? I'm a firm believer that you don't have to. Now, some, if you have genetic component that predisposes you to these conditions, then maybe so. But again, a lot of times it is lifestyle. So if we can simply make these lifestyle changes. So get out, start walking, exercising, start reducing your carb intake, right? Doing all these things. You can, in fact, cure yourself of diabetes, okay? You can lower your risk significantly of heart disease. So all of these things are important and is something that I hope our viewers take home.
Dr. Hall, giving us some great information here about a few things. I'm going to take a break here in a little bit, and then we'll finish up the talk. But I want to get into some symptoms and signs with you before we do that. What are some of the symptoms of a heart attack or signs that that may be happening to you or someone you are with?
Right. So let's talk about the classic heart attack symptoms. So standardly, most patients, when they come in to see me or if I'm seeing them in the emergency department, they'll come in and they're saying, I'm having this chest tightness. It's like somebody squeezing my chest, like a vice grip is on my chest, a pressure on my chest. And when I exert myself, when I'm going up and down the stairs, I'm walking across a parking lot, I'm walking to the mailbox, my chest gets tight. And the only way that that starts to ease up is if I sit down, okay? That may be associated with a cold sweat, sometimes nausea, sometimes pain, radiating to the left shoulder or left jaw. Okay, so those are some of the classic symptoms, particularly in men, and women will have these too. But women are unique because they will have oftentimes atypical symptoms, right? So they may not have the classic chest pain as a man would have. They may have stomach pain, back pain. They may have shoulder or jaw pain in the absence of chest pain. And in fact, over 50% of women that present with a heart attack won't have chest pain. Okay, so that's something very important that you should know. But the key is, in general, if you think that you are having a heart attack, if you have any of these symptoms that I just listed off, make sure that you have to go to the emergency department or seek emergency medical care immediately. Because in our business, time is heart. So whenever you're having a heart attack, that suggests that there's a blockage in one of the arteries that feeds your heart, okay? And the longer that that blockage is there, the longer that that heart tissue isn't getting proper blood supply. And the pain, the tightness is your heart telling you, hey, we need help, okay? So the quicker that you can get to the hospital, the better, the more likely it is you will survive a heart attack. Now, what's the first thing you do when you have those symptoms at home, right? What do? You take an aspirin, right? Take a full dose aspirin, which is a 325 milligram dose of aspirin. That serves as a blood thinner, what we call an antiplatelet, that will prevent the cascade of events that lead to a worsening heart attack. Okay, so it prevents the platelets, the blood clotting agents in your body, from clumping together, and it can buy you more time till you get to the hospital and we can evaluate you.
We'll get more of the conversation with Dr. Hall. It's Building Our Future on this Wednesday, the final Wednesday of February. We're back in a moment right after this.